I'm Leonida Inge. This is Test It from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, speaking out for workers' rights. Masks caught just some of the sweat pouring from demonstrators' faces on a day in downtown Durham, North Carolina earlier this week. With the temperature nearly 100 degrees, low-wage workers took to the streets to demand a living wage, $15 an hour.
Black lives
matter!
Black lives
matter!
Black lives
matter!
The strike for Black Lives was coordinated nationally. The Durham demonstration was one of about 25 happening in cities across the country. Mama Cookie of Durham has worked in the fast food industry for many years and still doesn't make $15 an hour.
These corporations that are hollering they're all for Black Lives, they're lying. Because they were for Black Lives, they pay us $15 an hour. They need to take them signs down and tell them we support Black Lives. You do not. If you're going to support us, give us what we need and what we deserve.
Mama Cookie and others chanting and marching with the advocacy group NC Raise Up say in this atmosphere of COVID-19, essential workers like them are keeping the economy going. Keenan Harton works for a Durham landscaping company.
Are you making $15 an hour at least?
No, I'm not. I have no hazard pay, no paid sick days, no health care. It's really bent out of shape right now.
Some organizations and corporations, like grocery store chains, have been adding a little extra to workers' paychecks these past few months. But those dollars for low-wage essential workers and bonus unemployment dollars for those out of work could end soon, as Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin alluded to this week.
Nobody's going to get more than $600, but again, if you were making $300, you're not going to get $600 this time. And that's fair. People understand that.
The debate over what's fair when it comes to wages and workers' rights has renewed energy in the pandemic period.
We do teach our children to be loud and proud. And it's just frustrating because we're in a time where, you know, do you teach them to be loud and proud, but maybe not as loud, because depending on how loud you are will determine your fate. And that is very unfortunate right now.
Sharita Williams had a job she loved, but found herself looking for a new one during the pandemic. Williams says after participating in a Black Lives Matter rally in Raleigh, her employer said she had to quarantine for 14 days without pay.
I just want to lead by example for my children. I fear for my children on a daily basis. When I am no longer on this earth, I hope and pray that they are not still fighting this battle. And so because of that, I wanted to take part in fighting it now.
So what if there were a policy that said, you know, if you go out and protest or frequent large gatherings in this time of social distancing, you risk the chance of being quarantined for 14 days without pay, you know, would you still have gone out to protest?
Yes, but 2 weeks without pay is a pretty hard hit for me. You know, my wife works, but I have two boys. I have fur babies, two cats, a dog, goldfish, bearded dragon. You know, there's a lot going on here. But I was kind of blindsided with that. I hope that for management, that they will open their eyes and be more tuned in to their employees. They have the right to ask questions. It is okay if they are not okay with the decision that management has made. You don't have to be quiet. You don't have to roll over. Everything is not okay. You don't have to pretend like things are okay. You can speak up. You can have a voice. You know, like we have rights also.
they should have by now taken the opportunity to update their policies and procedures, because this pandemic has been going on since March.
Karina Lemons is an attorney and managing partner of Lemons Law Firm in Durham. She specializes in employment law.
So it's been pretty interesting. Employers are really, really trying to figure out the COVID laws and some of the dangers there that they could face that would open them up to liability.
As part of her work, Lemons represents people experiencing discrimination in the workplace. She says she's recently observed employees feeling emboldened to bring long-standing issues to the surface.
I've seen that employees, because they are empowered, not just from COVID, but with the things that are going on with the Black Lives Matter movement, that they are empowered to speak up and say something. So I have seen employees that have had concerns of discrimination and harassment. And it's nothing new. I think that now we're seeing that people are more confident maybe in speaking up. Maybe it's because they're not having to, if they're working from home, they don't have to see their supervisor on a regular basis. And maybe the ability to work from home has kind of shielded them from some of that confrontation that they may be fearing. So I have seen that employees tend to be more willing to contact us and initiate a process that would allow them to get some type of relief from their employer.
I guess I'd like you to speak more on the responsibility of employers during this time, like, for example, the need to wear face masks. I wonder if it's the employer's responsibility to even provide face masks for their employees. And I just wonder, what is their responsibility?
Absolutely. OSHA actually passed a law in 2008 about the employer's requirement to pay for PPE. And the employer bears the financial responsibility to make sure that the PPE is available to employees to use. Employers should just assume that they need to provide those masks and whatever else PPE is required for that particular job.
When we think of essential workers, they've been in the workplace a lot longer than some of us. You know, some people have lost their jobs, are working from home, but you have those workers that are really on the front lines. What are some of their rights when we think about, you know, the job that they bring to the people and to the public?
Well, absolutely. Essential workers, the difference between them are, I guess it varies in the PPE. So if you're directly caring for a patient who has been tested positive, or they're suspected to have COVID-19, then the PPE threshold is going to be a lot higher. A cloth covering would be inadequate for a healthcare worker who is caring for COVID patients. So in terms of their rights, they have the same rights as other employees, but OSHA would certainly provide that the PPE is a lot more extensive. Whatever that employee needs to protect them against the virus. I don't know if anybody has ever been to a hospital or been to a COVID testing site. They've got on the hazmat suits almost there. They are covered up. So it depends on the employee, the grocery stores. You know, they're not going to have on that same type of gear that a physician would have.
And, you know, that's what's really concerning to me, because when I do hear or talk to people who have to work right now, but they're low wage workers, that's one of their biggest complaints. They don't feel safe. They don't feel like they have enough PPE. They don't think they have enough social distancing. And that's why in some, you know, manufacturing type plants and situations, you know, we have these hotbeds of people infected. So you just wonder, what does the future hold? You know, why is this? So you have workers who make the least amount of money and also seem to have the least amount of protection.
Yeah. And what about teachers? What are they going to do?
What are they going to do? What are they going to do?
If Plan B is implemented immediately, you know, what are they going to do with these children that aren't from their household and they're with them for 6-8 hours of the day? How do they protect themselves? How do the school systems protect these teachers and these children? You know, how are they going to do that? So these are not easy decisions. This is a new, this isn't the first pandemic, but this is different. This is a virus that is new. So there's a lot of questions. There's a lot to figure out.
Karina Lemons is an attorney and the managing partner of Lemons Law Firm in Durham. More in a moment.
Hey, I'm Russ Henry. I work with Leonita here at WUNC. Hope you're enjoying this episode. I'll let you get back to it, but I need just a minute to tell you about some other shows from WUNC you may like. Our politics podcast is basically required listening as we get closer and closer to the huge election day in our state. Capitol reporter Jeff Tabiri is all over the issues, the elected officials, and the news that's driving debate and policy in North Carolina. And speaking of news, the State of Things podcast features conversations with newsmakers, journalists, artists, activists, and others who are influencing the culture of North Carolina every single day. Hosts Frank Statio and Anita Rao offer a kind of up-close look at our state you won't get anywhere else. Check out the WUNC Politics podcast and the State of Things podcast right here on this app you're listening to. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode of these shows.
I'm on my way to freedom land. I'm on my way to freedom land.
This is gospel singer Mary D. Williams singing in the WUNC studio back in 2017. Hearing her powerful voice makes me think about the ongoing demonstrations for Black lives, against police brutality, for a livable wage. And it makes me think about the civil rights leaders we have lost since the pandemic began. Joseph Lowery, Charles Evers, C.T. Vivian, and of course, Congressman John Lewis. Lewis, a beloved freedom rider from Troy, Alabama, laid down to rest this week after spending so many decades taking it to the streets.
We are tired of being beaten by policemen. We're tired of seeing our people locked up in jail over and over again. And then you holler, be patient. How long can we be patient? We want our freedom and we want it now.
Some of you may remember Lewis as the youngest civil rights activist to speak at the 1963 March on Washington. The leader of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC, was small in stature, but grew to be a giant, lifting his voice to fight for the rights of Black people.
If we do not get meaningful legislation out of this Congress, the time will come when we will not confine our marching to Washington. We will march through the South, through the streets of Jackson, through the streets of Danville, through the streets of Cambridge, through the streets of Birmingham. But we will march with the spirit of love and with the spirit of dignity that we have shown here today.
When Lewis began his speech that day, he recognized the Black men and women who were not present, the sharecroppers in the Mississippi Delta, working for less than $3 a day, 12 hours a day. Decade after decade, Lewis remained on point, never wavering from his message of fighting the good fight. Quote, "When you see something that is not right, not fair, not just, you have a moral obligation to say something, to do something, stand up, speak out." Lewis lived to be 80 years old, and through that life, it was clear Lewis loved his people and he loved the South. He talked about this love often, like last November when he spoke with the Bitter Southerner on Georgia Public Broadcasting.
And it's amazing to me when I go back to rural Alabama where I grew up, travel through the state of Georgia or other parts in the South, I feel like we're more than lucky we are blessed to see all of these smart young people on the move. And many of the people that are not so young,
right,
they're moving with change. They want to help the South redeem. They want to make the South a better place. And in doing so, to make our nation and our world a better place.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me.
That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Leonida Inge. Charlie Shelton Orman is our producer. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.
And go home to my Lord and be free.